Consider the power of humanity are the forces behind the latest data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration that the temperatures are rising. 2014, the warmest year on record since record-keeping began in 1880. December alone was the hottest month. NASA scientists independently analyzed the data and reached the same conclusions. Today's news comes on the heels of a damning report yesterday in the journal Science, which found that humans may be causing irreversible damage to the oceans and the animals living in it. The power of humans. With us on the line now is Dr. Christopher Field, founding director of the Carnegie Institution's Department of Global Ecology. He's co-chair of the International Panel on Climate Change. Dr. Field, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks so much.
How much is this data a warning sign for things to come, and did it surprise you at all?
I think the way to look at these new sets of information is that it's a reminder of how much work we have to do. In some sense, it's no surprise that we're seeing the hottest year in the record because we are warming the system, and the expectation is that it's going to get warmer until we start taking the steps to prevent that. What's surprising about this year is that in the past, every time we've had a record warm year, it's been under El Niño conditions. El Niño kind of puts a boost on the global temperature. This year we didn't have El Niño conditions, but we still saw the highest temperatures ever.
What do you make of the warming of the oceans seeming to be, at least for 2014, a little bit faster or a little bit hotter than the rate of warming on land?
We've seen a period over the last several years when the distribution of the extra heat between the oceans and the land has drifted toward the ocean in ways that we're only beginning to understand. Essentially, what's happening is that the ocean is doing a better job than we had anticipated at pulling the higher temperatures down into the water. So this is a continuation of that trend. We've done a really good job of predicting how much extra heat is in the system, and the little nuances are how much ends up in the land and how much ends up in the oceans. It doesn't have a big effect on the long-term trajectory of warming of the planet. It does have some influence on the year-to-year bumps, and it probably has some impact on the year-to-year consequences of the way that warming plays out.
But I'm thinking here, and maybe I'm putting words into your mouth, but I'm thinking here that scientists believe it's pretty dangerous to think of the oceans as some kind of a heat sink, that that's a very dangerous way of looking at the oceans because heat is very damaging to them just as much as pollution.
Over the last several years, something like 95 to 98% of the extra heat in the system has ended up in the oceans. So we know the oceans are warming strongly, and we also know that many of the organisms in the oceans are very temperature sensitive. So it's not like the oceans represent some kind of a safety valve. We have temperature systems on land, temperature sensitive systems on land, temperature sensitive species and ecosystems in the ocean as well. So extra heat is a problem, and it's a problem whether or not it's in the land or in the oceans.
The New York Times suggested, quoting a scientist here, in this data and some independent data about what's going on in the oceans, that it's beginning to look as though we're on the edge of what was described as a major extinction event. Is that to say that things could happen very rapidly in the ocean because of the nature of a water fluid system, or that there's just something going on in terms of contamination to the ocean that it feels irreversible?
This new study on the ocean pulls together a wide range of different kinds of information, not only information about consequences of climate change, increases in temperature and acidification, but also consequences of changes in pressure from fishing and other ecosystem changes. And it's typical of what we see around the world that ecosystems and societies are really responding to multiple kinds of pressures. They're in a multi-stressor environment. The oceans are as well. And when you look at the precarious situation of the oceans, it's more because of this multi-stressor situation than it is because of the predominant effects of climate change or any single factor.
So that would point the finger at the habitat destruction, where you've got nets and fishing apparatus clearing coral beds and mining clearing bottom habitats. How much of this habitat is under threat right now?
When we look around the world, and in the oceans in particular, what we see is a wide range of factors that are impinging on essentially every system. So in the oceans, you doesn't look at temperature change. You can look at the acidification that comes from the extra carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. You can look at fishing pressures. You can look at the big expansion in underwater mining. You can look at the big expansion in coastal development and coastal runoff and pollution. And just there's a long checklist of challenges that ocean ecosystems are currently facing, and it really creates a precarious situation. One of the big challenges with the pace of change and the magnitude of the threat is it's hard to predict when things fall apart, but we know there's a lot of pressure that is leaning on the system to cause fractures.
What does this NOAA data say about the distribution of temperature change? And I'm thinking particularly about droughts in Africa and in California and the West, where people are very concerned about what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years.
You can think about the global average temperature as kind of a speedometer of the way the entire planet's going. But people don't go to the hospital or crops don't fail typically because of the average conditions. They fail because of extremes. And what we're seeing is that the average conditions are a good marker for what's happening in terms of extremes, and that includes extremes in heat waves, extremes in the length and the severity of droughts, and extremes in the fraction of the rainfall that falls in the heaviest precipitation events. Those are the kinds of conditions that really cause damages, and we've seen a continuing increase in those kinds of extremes, even as the average temperature has gone through some periods of more rapid increase and some periods of less rapid increase.
Is there anything about these data that suggests that glaciers and melting events are going to accelerate in specific terms? Is there water level indications from this 1 degree rise in the ocean, for instance?
The thing that's important to remember is that calculating how much extra heat ends up in the Earth system on a year-by-year basis is pretty straightforward. That's one of the reasons that the scientific community is so concerned about the climate change problem. Calculating how much temperature difference we see on a year-to-year basis is a much more difficult problem because it has influences from El Niño and other kinds of year-to-year variability. So it's not a surprise that we're seeing a continuous increase in temperatures. The magnitude of this one is a little bit of a surprise, and the fact that it occurs in a non-El Niño year, but it's really a reminder of how much extra heat we're putting in the system and how this extra heat is causing a wide range of impacts from melting mountain glaciers to decreases in Arctic sea ice, to increases in heat waves and hot events, and to increases in the length and severity of droughts. The whole package tends to go together with the extra heat in the system, and that's reflected in this global average temperature measurement.
Finally, skeptics will say, okay, you've got the increased temperature, but do you have the connection with the human activity that's causing this increased temperature? Is that in the data here, or is there anything new there?
The understanding of the link between human emissions of these heat-trapping gases and the global temperature pattern is something where the physics have been basically understood for more than 100 years. So it's not a surprise to see the temperature of the planet warming. And what's important to remember is that this is really a reminder of what we're going to need to do in order to prevent future temperature increases. At some point, we're going to have to stop emitting these heat-trapping gases to the atmosphere if we want to slow the pace of temperature increase.
Has time run out?
No, this is a problem we can solve, but we have to solve it with ambitious efforts to decrease the amount of heat-trapping gases that are released. The longer we wait, the more difficult it gets to be, the more complicated the problem gets, and the more residual impacts we're going to see.
Dr. Christopher Field, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Christopher Field is founding director of the Carnegie Institution's Department of Global Ecology and a co-chair of the International Panel on Climate Change. To see some detailed charts and graphs included in today's NOAA report, visit thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.